Talking about Mr. B. Yeah, this happened first time out of the gate.
Oh my God.
Holy.
We fucking did it.
Unbelievable.
I can't believe it. It's clearly this is season two of Not Your Mama's Therapy because we are experts now. Okay.
Yeah, we're just like a couple of monkeys without thumbs. So this
last... I fucking hate monkeys, but yes.
Nobody hates monkeys.
Well,
you hate one monkey.
Pretty sure we have a whole episode devoted.
You hate one monkey. Just one. Not all monkeys.
Can you imagine? Just that one particular fucking monkey.
Do you remember the name of that monkey by chance?
No, God, no. I wish I did. I honestly think it was something stupid.
Yeah.
It was like Molly or something like that. You know what I mean? Of course it was Molly. Who else is going to throw period clads at people? You know what I mean?
Molly the monkey.
Molly. Classic Molly behavior.
Yeah. She really didn't give a shit, did she?
No.
She hated you as much as you hated her.
Truly.
Mutual disdain.
We bonded over our hatred of one another. 100%.
Do we even know how to do this anymore?
No. Listen,
I have no idea where we're going.
Listen, I think that our listeners have expected a high quality, high caliber production. And that is what we deliver to them every time. Okay.
Oh, no, we don't.
Welcome back to season two of Not Your Mama's Therapy, where nothing has changed.
Nothing. You know what? If it works, don't fucking fix it. If it ain't broke. Clearly something's broken.
Oh my God. Okay. I have to tell this story to our listeners because it's just you and me. Like it's just you and me.
All right.
So Lara and I hopped on like a FaceTime. What was this? Like a week ago? And
I just FaceTimed you out of the blue, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And it was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And literally, I think we laughed. Like we didn't say one fucking thing to each other. We looked at each other, our eyes connected, and we just laughed for 5 minutes.
It's true. Yeah. And I love the assumption that everyone else enjoys this. Right. Just who do we think we are?
Oh my God, the arrogance in this podcast.
Truly. But I mean, think about it. Anyone who has a podcast, I'm going to be put up a podcast, right? Like there's some.
There has to be. There has to be.
I have some ideas worth sharing.
Right. I definitely think people want to hear my voice on their ride home.
I know I do.
I mean, right back at you, bucko.
I'm entertained by you endlessly. Truly. This is one of my favorite people in the entirety of my life. This one right here. Honestly, I would buy time at your house.
Oh, my God.
So when that camera opened up on that FaceTime and we just immediately both sounded like two balloons whose air was being slowly let out.
Yes. It's spot on. So, well, and what has been a very fun development that we can share in season two is that I now get direct texts from your boys and they kiss.
They love them some Aunt Sarah. They do. That's how you're referred to in the house now. Well, Aunt Sarah said, I'm like, what did she say to you? Wait, hold on a second. We need to check that. Yeah.
One of them sent me a video of some kind, which was, it's always hysterical what they find funny. Mm-hmm. And I think I replied with like ROFL or something like that. Mm. And I think Jake was like, what does that mean?
Who's that?
Like what? Yeah. Right, and I was like rolling on the floor laughing and he was, and I was like, but I bet you assumed the F was fuck because it came from me.
You know, it's true.
Yeah, he's like, absolutely. I did. I couldn't figure out what it was. R O fuck L.
That's it. I had fuck. That's it. No idea.
This is my favorite. It's my favorite.
Yeah. It's theirs too.
Oh my God. Well, thank you for joining me. This is Lara Torrance, licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm Sarah Card, connoisseur of all things therapy. I know the good, I know the bad, and I'm still in
it. Seeing the ugly.
Still in
it. Yeah. That's right.
I feel like everybody should be in therapy, though. So, I don't really see a need to stop going to therapy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yours is a maintenance.
Yes.
Constant maintenance. Now, is this a weekly thing for you or is it twice a month?
No, it's typically weekly for me because stress levels are high with work and stuff like that. So it's helpful to like have that Monday reset.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as microdosing therapy. Mm. You know what I mean? Like,
it feels a little more like a macro dose at four times a month.
Listen, I don't need the criticism.
That's just an observation.
I was trying to build a flawless segue.
Oh.
From microdosing into That's our right. topic for okay. the day.
All right. Listen. I like where you're going. But you know what? I'm with you as always, you know, just riffing. Because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
On each other. The micro macro dose.
Yeah. And I hope nobody ever thinks that we sit down and talk about shit beforehand. There is no script.
No.
There are no notes.
No.
It is fly by the seat of our pants every time.
Every single time. And consequently, we cannot confirm or deny the validity of any of the stuff we offer you.
Truly. Honestly, you should probably turn us off and unsubscribe because... We are charlatans.
We really are. Just saying shit into a microphone. I got a podcast.
So I shared the fact that we have a podcast with one of my clients who is also a friend, and she sort of oversees the work that I do for this company.
Yeah.
And the first episode that she listened to of ours was the fucking monkey episode. Can you imagine? Those of you
have not listened to the monkey episode. It's just, you know what? Save it for Christmas time. Give it to yourself as a little gift.
100%.
It's easily.
Yeah. Tuck that one in your stocking.
Usually,
so good.
One of us will come to the table with a good one, like a juicy story about someone or something that's happened. That was one where we were both firing on both cylinders.
Do you know what I mean? So juicy. Yeah. It's so true. I listened to that episode with my husband and my mom, like driving at one point, and I was laughing before we started laughing because I knew we were going to start laughing. Like, I'm sitting here driving, crying, laughing.
Well,
I don't care if they're laughing at all. Like I find it so fucking funny.
We don't care if you're entertained or informed.
We're having fun.
And we're just...
We're having a good time.
We're just sort of like hoping against hope that somehow you're finding some of this enjoyable.
Yeah. And maybe like, listen, like maybe one every 10 episodes is useful. That's what I'm shooting for.
The self-deprecation is thick today. So what do we want to talk about today? What don't we want to talk about today?
I think this is a great season 2, episode 1. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to talk about your psilocybin journey.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Which I think, you know, we could talk a little bit about plant-based medicine and all of the incredible things that researchers are doing with psilocybin and other plant-based medicines. Mm-hmm. Kind of explain like your thought process and even like going into the whole thing.
So it's multi-pronged for me. First of all, I think it's, you know, unless you're living under a rock, you know that psilocybin, plant-based medicine interventions, therapeutic interventions are kind of a hot topic right now. You have a lot of people out there talking about it. You have a lot of research going into it. They're using psilocybin with cancer patients. They're doing clinical trials around that. And so people are getting really interested in the psychedelic space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I noticed a lot of clients were coming to me with questions. And so I can read up on all of that stuff and have some sense of it. I had clients as I was reading kind of going, I think this is something that may be beneficial for some of them. But as you know, by and large, I try to not ask a client to walk a path that I'm unwilling to walk myself. But also, I'm not just a therapist, I'm a human being as well. And I have what only could be described as pre-verbal sort of endemic trauma from being in utero, I think. I got trauma from my mother's stress. She was pregnant when she was 14 with me, had me when she had just turned 15. They were impoverished for sure. They were socioeconomically impaired. And I can only imagine the amount of stress that poor kid, because you know, my son's 14 right now.
Right. It's crazy, right?
Yeah. And it's like, I'm looking at these, his, some of his friends, these girls that are his friends are 14. And I'm thinking to myself, this, can you imagine what that stress was like? Well, at some level, I feel like I can, because I feel like it's sort of wrapped around my skeletal frame. Mm. And in my own personal work, I've had a real hard time kind of getting below the hard deck, as it were, on some of that, some of that anxiety, mm-hmm. some of that fear. Mm-hmm. You know, try as I might, and you know, I go to therapy and I do my work and I do my work on my own. There were just some pieces there that I thought were worth looking into. And so the first foray into this was I did a couple of ketamine sessions mm-hmm. where I went to a Charleston Ketamine Center. Mm-hmm. They'll probably give me another free one on that. You know what I mean? Just drop. Yeah.
All these people listening to our podcast, they're totally. Like, free sponsorship.
He mentioned us. Come on over. Let me give you some of the juice for free. And so I did it. I did some ketamine. Mm-hmm. And I did two sessions. And again, I had clients who were, you know, considering it, thinking about it. And I couldn't really speak to it from anything other than what I had read without having done it. And so I went there reputable and they're good. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. But, you know, people in sort of the psychedelic space will say that there's a difference between synthetic intervention and plant-based intervention. Mm-hmm. And that for those who have done both, we'll say that the plant-based intervention, the plant-based medicines of like psilocybin, ayahuasca, peyote, iboga, they all have a soul and mm-hmm. a different energy, mm-hmm. whereas the synthetics don't. And mm-hmm. I have to say, it's hard to put your finger on, but having done both, I can tell you mm-hmm. that there does feel like there is a difference. Now, yeah. the ketamine intervention is interesting. You know, it's an out of body experience, right? Like I remember looking at my hand going, I know that's my hand, but it didn't feel like my hand. And so mm-hmm. that had its own interesting sort of sense of it. I got the sense that this is probably what it feels like to die, mm-hmm. to no longer have a body and mm-hmm. to, at some level, not really care.
Like you sort of transcended your physical form yeah. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You felt like you were just out in the ethers. Mm. They also give you a pretty healthy anti-anxiety shot. Mm. You know, when you disembody in that fashion, very often you will become panicky and they call that a K-hole.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you get all freaked out. And mm-hmm. I know that I would have had it not been for that anti-anxiety, which also sort of prohibits a lot in the way of an experience, which
it's not a full experience. It's kind of like a dulled thing.
It's dulled. It's also there's something about giving yourself over to the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, having the anti-anxiety, while helpful for a lot of reasons, also I think left a lot on the table. At least that was my thought as I got inch closer to have a more significant plant-based intervention. So mm-hmm. with that, do you have any questions so far?
Well, what I did want to say, just as a slight disclaimer for everybody who's listening, we are not talking about going to some guy in a back alley and
we're not
picking up is that where you got yours?
No, I nothing happened.
Don't worry about it. Anyway,
I'm good. I think nothing happened.
We're talking right. about literal clinics that are set up to oversee these experiences and help mm-hmm. people guide people through these experiences. And that's the way to do it, right?
Yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there are different ways that you can do it. Like I have had clients who, and this was in New York, and some state by state may be different. And so I don't know all the ins and outs, but like they will give you ketamine to take home with you. Mm. What I received was intravenous, and it happens at the ketamine center, wherever you are, and they have them all over the place. Mm-hmm. I also sat in on one of my clients who did a couple of ketamine sessions. And so he dropped into that space and we talked, and I have to say, things came out that had not come out in therapy before. Mm. One connection in particular was I do a lot of parts-based work. And he had this younger version of himself, this kid part of him that sadly, this client could not, would not see this part of himself through a compassionate lens. Mm. He was very much in judgment of this part of himself and always had been, caustically so. Mm. And treated this young part of himself much the way his father treated him. Right. So it's the interject the parent part. That, so he was constantly caustic with himself. And so within in that experience, we got to this place of him being able to find some sense of compassion for the first time.
Wow. That's incredible. So you had this experience with the ketamine at the ketamine clinic, and you sort of walked away with knowledge. What sort of brought you into now this psilocybin experience?
That's interesting. You know, it had always just sort of been knocking on my door. And because I was noting where some of the work that I was doing from a therapeutic perspective on myself and with my person, it just was falling short. And it just felt like, you know, I couldn't really get to the depth that I needed, because this was, again, pre-verbal stuff, you know, that I can't consciously remember, that, you know, trauma lives in the body. The body keeps the score, as that book likes to say. And, you know, I just could not find it. I could not get a hold of it. And so as I was reading these studies and as I was looking at these different documentaries that are out around it, I kept, you know, more question marks, like, and then, you know, I ran it past my wife, who's a therapist, and she was like, you know, these things look pretty compelling. And she's kind of a teetotaler when it comes to a lot of this stuff. Like, she doesn't like potheads or taking a lot of drugs or drinking or anything like that. It's just not for her. And so the idea that she would be even remotely open to me doing something like this tells you, A, that, like, she recognized my trauma and where that was, and the fact that I was having a hard time getting hold of it.
Sure. And obviously the benefits that you could receive from a treatment like this. It is fascinating. Like, what I've always heard and read and seen in these documentaries, just like you, has been, it's almost like, it's like a reset button, psilocybin. Like, something happens with the rewiring of your brain or whatever it is. And it's done incredible work for veterans with PTSD.
That's right.
It's done incredible work for survivors of, you know, various horrible catastrophes and things like that. And, you know, like, I've always been fascinated with the idea of that mushrooms were the thing that took us from monkeys essentially to thoughtful humans, that something in there, mushrooms have the same sort of networking as our brain. And something happened there that suddenly turned us into thinking, thoughtful creatures. So,
do you think that monkey was thinking anything about you when it was throwing poop at you?
I think, here's what I'm going to tell you. I think it was a fuck. Okay. And I think that's all it was thinking. It was like, how can I be an absolute fucking monster to this 16-year-old who just needs to make a little money outside of school? Okay. Like,
the best part is how much you love animals. There's no one who loves animals more.
It's so true.
And like, you hate this monkey with a passion.
I see you send me videos of monkeys and I have a visceral reaction.
No, I do.
Fucking monkey.
I actually send her as many as I can. There's one monkey in particular who likes to walk around in pajama bottoms and he rides dogs. He like wakes these dogs up on the street and rides them. And I find it to be
an asshole.
I just think it's hysterical.
So I'll be sitting there having a perfectly good day and I get this text from Lair of a fucking monkey in pajama bottoms
riding a dog.
Annoying a poor sweet dog that just is
so good. And I usually caption it with a, well, it looks like this motherfucker's at it again.
You're such a fucking dick, dude. So anyway, your smoke show wife was in on it.
She was, and she is, and was. But that's interesting. You know, I had never heard that before, that this is perhaps the mushrooms were the thing that like evolved the brain.
Yeah. I wish if Corey were here, I would shout to him right now and be like, babe, what's it called? Cause I think they talk about it a little bit in that mushroom documentary on Netflix. But basically, it's the idea that we were apes or not
change your mind.
Thoughtful proto-humans or whatever, and that in the process of our foraging and whatever, we ate mushrooms and it started to develop our neural network in a way that it hadn't ever been before. And it's this idea of like, you know, a mushroom, what you see of a mushroom is not the mushroom. It's just a piece, a tiny piece that networks out under the ground. And it's, again, like when you see these things like mapped out, they look just like our neurons and our brains. And so I find that really interesting and compelling. And so when you were talking about, like, there's just something about plant-based medicine, I always think like, well, yeah, because that's where it started. Like, that's like the original piece of ourselves that made us who we are, if you believe in the theory. So,
you know, it makes sense to me. I mean, look, having gone through it, and look, I had taken mushrooms recreationally with my friends, and I didn't get experience.
Right? With Brian, you didn't.
No, Brian would never. Brian would never. He's too buttoned up, motherfucker. No, this is with Tommy Schultz.
I should have known it was Tommy Schultz.
Yeah, I've told you those stories before.
But yeah, it was a completely different experience for you than, you know, you're looking at a clinical sort of thing happening here.
That's right. That's right.
So Ash was down for you giving this a try. So then sort of talk about the steps and how you were preparing yourself, what you were doing, et cetera, to kind of get to that point.
So I have, you know, when you get into it with anyone who's in sort of that, the plant-based space, they will begin to speak of the plant-based people. You know, they'll talk about the medicine. They talk about the medicine almost as if it's like a person or an energy. And I always, you know, that's mildly annoying sometimes, but also accurate. And so one of the sort of old tropes within the space is that once you start asking questions about the medicine and you want to experience the medicine will find you. That you actually don't even have to go looking for it, that eventually it'll just sort of end up. And so that's exactly what happened. I had been rooting around in my head with these questions, sort of talking with Ash here and there about it. And then one day she and I were at breakfast with this friend of a person that we kind of work with. And he was like, oh, we're doing a mushroom ceremony on Sunday. And Ashley immediately turned to me. She goes, you're going. And I was like, what? I didn't know it was that bad. Yeah. I was like, what? He goes, there's room if you want to go. And so I reluctantly said, okay. And I have to be honest with you, I could not have been more nervous when I had committed to it. You know, I know how I get on that type of drug, and it freaks me out. And letting go to that degree and allowing myself to slip into that space was really fear inducing.
It's like pure vulnerability.
It is. And letting go, right? And letting go and allowing for this experience to show me what it is it needed to show me. And so I signed up and I went.
So what was the thing that got you over the fear? What was the thing that stopped you from not going, essentially?
That's a great question, because I don't think the fear ever actually went away. Right up until because there's a kind of a bit of a story in that. But I said, you know, I can continue this way, wrestling with this anxiety, dealing with this on, you know, almost daily basis. Because I feel like I had reached this point in my work where there was this wall. And it's not that my life was angst-ridden prior to this, but just I had come to this place where I needed some other kind of intervention to deal with this hard deck of anxiety and fear that was living in my body that I think I had inherited from my mother's experience. And so I just knew that I didn't want to continue this way any longer. I didn't want to continue to not understand it. I thought if there was any nugget that this experience could offer me, then I would take it. Now, the thing that fortified me was all the work that I had done therapeutically prior to this. You know, I've seen a lot of people who were not deep in their own personal work with a therapist or even on their own fly off to Peru or Costa Rica. And the thing I always say is the same asshole that walked in that jungle is the same asshole that walked out. That for me, and this is my experience, that if you don't have something for this medicinal experience to sit upon, a foundation of therapeutic work, you'll get a glimpse, but it won't last.
It's not going to be as profound.
I don't think so. Even with, you know, the whole rewriting the brain and all of that, like there's a lot of those notions out there. I think that can happen, but with massive doses. That's primarily what I think we're seeing is massive doses, bigger doses than I'm willing to, bigger doses than I took that day.
Absolutely. So you get to the place. Is it just you, or are you there with
two other people there, plus two facilitators? And you know, that's the other thing, you know,
okay. Like
these facilitators are people that I knew through other people. They were sort of vetted through people. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I was showing up and had no idea of this person whatsoever. I truly trusted right. the person who right. put me in contact with these folks. And there are people out there that facilitate these types of interventions and facilitate these ceremonies.
Mm, okay. All right. So then, okay. So you're there, you see the other people. Is there any sort of like prep work they do that they talk to you about?
So we all sort of introduce ourselves and we're all sort of sitting around in this very comfortable living room. And we just all kind of went around and the coffee table was sort of set up like an altar. She just asked us, you know, what are your intentions? You know, what are you here to work on? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you're sort of naming it for yourself and you're sort of naming it essentially for the worker that's with you and also for the medicine. You're sort of saying, this is my intention. And so my intention was to come in contact with this experience and to not resist it, to learn what non-resistance really looks like, to try and get into a different relationship to my fear and my anxiety.
Mm. At that point, are you sort of like, you've steeled yourself, or is there still that fear there right up until you're taking it and beyond?
Fucking scared, even more scared than I was. Gosh. Like I'm like, oh my God. You feel like you're in line at the big ride. And so you can't get out
right,
of the line.
Right, right.
Know? Otherwise, I mean you could, but I was like, you know, and I had waffled enough because I just don't love like even like, you know, marijuana. It's like I don't love the feeling, quite frankly, of whatever that is. It's like, it's different from a glass of wine. I just have never loved that feeling of not being in control. Sure. And so that's interesting. What is it about the control and the letting go that is so important to have and so important to come in contact
right.
with?
Right.
And I knew that unless I had some sort of intervention like this one, I was never really going to be able to answer that question because there's this part of me that will not let go. Mm-hmm. And so she then gave us chocolates. It took about 2.5 grams. So it was kind of a macro microdose, certainly bigger than a microdose, way bigger than a microdose, quite frankly. 4 grams is supposed to be the big one. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, I knew my nervous system at that point. And I really liked, you know, from having had an assessment with this facilitator prior to, you know, she's like, I really think your nervous system as we start out, probably, you know, 2.5 grams.
That's nice. So they kind of had decided on your dosing prior to actually eating the chocolate, so to speak.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So you've eaten your chocolate. Are you now like in a room on a pillow with these other two people? Are you sort of given your own space? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we were given our own space. So we kind of all went to these different bedrooms in this apartment. It was a really nice apartment. You know, the two facilitators, the idea was that they were going to float around between the three of us, the three people dropping into the experience. And let me also say that I made sure that this was not a situation where the facilitator was also dropping into the medicine space.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm. One of my best friends and colleagues, he went on a medicine journey facilitated by this medicine guy, and the guy dropped in with his clients and then freaked out and had to abandon his clients while they were deep in it at night in the woods alone.
It
was
nightmare.
A horrifying, absolute fucking nightmare. And for me, incredibly unprofessional. And it takes it to, you know, it pulls all the therapeutic good out of it. And it becomes a, you know, a possibly re-traumatizing experience.
Yeah, no kidding. Absolutely. I think that's such a good point because I think probably more people than not are used to like the plant-based medicine person is going to be taking the plant-based medicine with me. This is going to be a big journey we're all going to take together. But for these purposes, these purposes where you're genuinely trying to unlock something with facilitators, what they did is so much healthier and so much more appropriate.
I could not say more about the level of professionalism that these two people displayed. They were amazing at holding space. They were amazing at containment. And I just don't think, no matter how experienced they might have been with psilocybin, I just don't think it would have been the same. I don't think I would have felt as assured of their solidity in that moment. And that's exactly what I needed. I needed to know that there was someone on belay, that someone was holding the safety rope. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if I had had way more experience in this, I could, maybe that's a whole nother thing, but that feels like some next level shit that I'm not ready for.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think if anyone's going to do something like this, it's like, don't try to be a hero out of the gate. Mm-hmm. Safety first. We don't want to re-traumatize anybody if you decide to do something like this. And I think a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. With a lot of excitement about something like this and with a lot of like attention comes a lot of people trying to do these things because they want to make money. And so they'll hold these retreats. And I was sure of everything. I was sure of the place that I was going to be in. I was sure of the people that I was going to be with. I was sure of where the psilocybin was being sourced, which is also really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, it's like that video you posted recently about, you know, there's a lot of people that call themselves therapists that aren't therapists, which we'll talk about on a different episode. But it's the same thing with plant-based medicine facilitators. There's a lot of people who just want to make a lot of money saying they're doing something that could potentially be far worse for you the long run.
That's right. And this woman was a very, she'd been very practiced in this, had done it for a lot of years. The woman that was with her, she was mentoring and teaching her how to do this. But
that's nice.
The woman was very skilled, but she was also working in this mentor position, which I think, you know, that's amazing, right? That there's this level of integrity in that work for these women. So anyway, you were going to ask?
I want to get into the experience. I want to talk about so now you're in it.
I said to them about 20 minutes in after we ate it, I'm like, and she looks over at me and goes, feeling it? I was like, I think I've clicked in. She's like, okay, well, let's go get you comfortable. Mm. And so we all went to our separate rooms. And one gentleman, he just put on his blindfold and his music on. He did not need a facilitator. There was another gentleman there that was in obvious pain and dealing with obvious grief and perhaps addiction. And my heart just went out. You know, he needed a facilitator with him the whole time. Mm. And thankfully, he had one. And I felt it coming. So there I am sitting in the room and she's sitting there next to me. And she's like, you're really feeling it. I was like, yeah. You know, all of a sudden, it was just like you see in the movies, man, like the walls started moving and the bedspread was white, looked like a river of milk. And so there I am. And I could feel myself becoming a little panicky. Like, oh, man, I'm like, oh, here we go. This is. I'm looking at my watch and I don't want to look at my watch because I know I've probably got 4 hours. All of a sudden, this thought came into my mind and plant-based people say, well, the medicine was speaking to you. And so if that were true, it said to me, there's a couple ways you can do this. I looked at her face for a little bit and it's like, the woman started looking like an evil fairy.
Oh gosh. And you said you had this, like, that it was like, it was speaking to you.
Yeah. So the medicine sort of starts speaking to me. And I said, you know, you can go through this a couple different ways. Mm. Okay. You can hang on to the sides and you can resist this or you can let go because you know that's why you're here. You're here to let go and to let this experience show you what it has for you. Not necessarily what you want. You can brace for this and just hope for it to be over soon. Or you can breathe in and know that there's going to be some moments of discomfort. Mm-hmm. I went, okay. And I just started talking. And and talking. And honestly, I talked for 4 fucking hours straight.
Do you remember?
I do.
The things you were saying?
I remember all of it. It wasn't one of those things where I was like, there were moments where I had to stop and go like, okay, so that thought, I don't know where that came from. Like, I don't know why I started talking about why some dogs are brown. Yeah. You know, there was some disjointedness to it and we would laugh and she said, well, yeah, you know, you obviously have psilocybin in your blood right now. You're in a different place. But really what I started doing was I had this like, it wasn't like visions of people. I was going through this retrospective of my life. And I was looking at all of the narratives that I have, that I hold. There's this, it showed me like this bank vault of narratives, of stories I have of trauma, of woe, of bullying, of being treated poorly, of not being loved, not feeling like I'm enough. Not feeling like I mattered to this one, to that one. And so I had this vision came to me and it was a vision that's going to date me, but it was a vision of Lily Tomlin.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's Lily Tomlin. I forget the name of the character that she played, but she played this character on Laugh-In' where she was this old timey telephone operator and she would plug the things into the different. And she'd go one ringy dingy, two ringy. And so in my vision, Lily Tomlin grabbed all of the cords, which were the cords going from me to these stories. And she put her foot up on the console and she pulled them all clown at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
And so this vision was really powerful for me. And I told the woman, I was like, I see Lily Tomlin right now. She started laughing. She was my age, so she understood the reference. And I said, what I'm coming to understand is like this experience is I am pulling the cords away from these narratives mm-hmm. of being the unloved, of being the not enough kid, of not feeling loved, not feeling like I matter in the world, not feeling mm-hmm. safe in the world. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that this experience showed me is that my investment in those stories was profound.
Right.
And here's why.
Plugged into them.
I was, thank you. There it is.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why you're here. Yeah. That's why you're fucking here.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was plugged into them and I was invested in them. And here's why. And this is what I got in the experience, which I don't know that I would have gotten otherwise, which was if you don't stay plugged into them and you unplug and you let go, then they get away with it. Right. And so mm-hmm. some part of me is holding them accountable. But the only one really being held in account was me.
Yeah, the only one being hurt because I was you.
Those thoughts become feelings because I have that thought of woe, of being treated terribly, of being bullied, of being unloved, and my father's not loving me, not liking me, right? And that thought creates a feeling. That feeling, we've talked about this in this podcast 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Right? Because the brain tells a story that the body believes. And so I'm staying plugged into these stories and staying plugged into these narratives to the point where I'm having these experiences again and again throughout my life. And then a good old Lily Tomlin comes in and unplugs them for me.
Bless her.
You know what I mean?
I love that that was the thing. That was the thing.
That's you're in that dreamlike state where that's an image that you'd have in a dream. Right.
And as funny as it is, and as, you know, whatever, it absolutely makes sense. Like it's absolutely a perfect visualization mm-hmm. of what was happening, mm-hmm. which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I continue to talk and continue to unplug and continue to name stories. And, you know, it's like I always say, if we have an ability to name something, not give it a name like that's Bill, but to name something and say, this is that experience. This is what I think and this is what I feel from that experience. And we get separation from that experience. And so I was doing that. I was unplugging in a really profound way. And so the next thing I know, I was sort of kind of coming out of it and I was feeling pretty normal. Mm. We reconvened back in the living room and had a little bit of a debrief and everybody hugged it out and I went home.
And what is it like to go through something like that and then just like re-plug into normalcy? How did that feel?
Well, walking down that street was surreal and things were a little sparkly. I'm not going to lie. The interesting thing was, is when I was texting with her, she's like, yeah. And so parking's around the corner. I was like, wait, so I'm driving in this scenario. Like I'm going to be okay. She's like, you'll be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it totally leaves your system, I guess. And that's what I felt. So it was some hours later that I obviously had it. So, but to replug in, it's not that not that everything's healed and there's no bad days, but I have this touchstone and I have this experience of separating from this endemic sort of trauma and anxiety and fear that felt like it was in the small fibers of my existence. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't feel like it's there anymore. It feels like it's still mm-hmm. around. Like I can still tap into it, but I don't feel like I need to tap into it anymore. And I certainly mm-hmm. don't feel like I need to hold those people accountable for anything.
What I remember too of when you called me the next day, you had talked about how you saw yourself now. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that was, it makes me misty just thinking about how you talked about it. So I wondered if you could tap into that a little bit with your audience, with our audience of like, what was that like for you?
Yeah. So when you have the experience of that type of trauma and being treated that way by those people, when the people who were supposed to love you the most in the world didn't, as kids, we create a part of ourselves that we don't like, that we don't love. It doesn't feel like we're enough. All of the things that the way we were treated becomes the way we feel about ourselves. And so there was a part of me that I have to be honest, I didn't like mm-hmm. because it was the reflection of how I was treated. Like there's something wrong with me that they would have treated me that way. Mm-hmm. And that was gone. And mm-hmm. that's still gone. Mm-hmm. That sense that I see someone that I really like, no longer filtered through. Yeah, but the shitty, no, that I've unplugged from. And mm-hmm. I've given that back to the people who did it. You mm-hmm. know, that's yours because mm-hmm. they have a piece of it, whether they remember it mm-hmm. or not, or hold themselves accountable is neither here nor there. That's not my work. My work is here and to not forgive them necessarily, but to forgive myself. Because there's really mm-hmm. like a weird, like forgiving myself for having been treated that way.
Right. And everything that holding them accountable meant mm-hmm. to who you were as a person mm-hmm. or how you felt it was holding them accountable.
That's right.
But I think, I, you know, every aspect of that story just reinforces how that experience was, you know, a product of how much work you've done to get to that experience.
I think that's right.
And, you know, I don't know if you could have even recognized the switchboard if you hadn't done the work that you did and understood, you know, what you were bringing. Yeah. Yeah.
The images, it would have just been,
that's right. It would have just been Lily Tomlin at a fucking switchboard.
And I saw Lily Tomlin. What's weird? So strange. We had a chat.
Right. Right.
You know, friends, people that I've known who've gone into these experiences and taken away nothing. You know, it's probably largely what you're saying. But what I experienced was broad spectrum acceptance of what was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's part of the problem is wrestling with that. Like, I can't accept the way that went down, the way I was treated, or the way that I wasn't cared for or loved. I can't accept that. And this allowed me the room to go, yeah, that was that. That's what this was. So broad spectrum acceptance of what was. Now, the work going forward is broad spectrum acceptance of what is and broad spectrum acceptance of what might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that becomes the work in the moment.
And so did this experience enter into, you know, your continued therapy work? Like, is this something you're sharing with your therapist and talking about?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Here's the things I want to work on and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Informs, you know, it's informative for all the work for me right now.
Okay. I have one more question. Do you think you would do it again?
I know I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm planning it.
Do you think you'd come with the same fear? Or do you think it would be?
I mean, it's less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less, but
sure.
Certainly, like, I hope, because, you know, I know that people say this, like, it's rarely the same. And, you know, some of them are like bad. And, you know, as I talk to the facilitator later, and then this integration, and that's the other thing we didn't cover is integration, like integrating this experience is what you're kind of talking about as far as bringing it to your therapist and being able to reflect on it. Yeah. That's integrating the experience is really important. But she said, you know, you had what could only be described as like if we had a textbook for this would be the experience we were looking for.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they're
and
always
you came in
that
ready
way.
For it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you came in needing it. This was what you needed.
And the plant-based people would say, you know, talk to it prior to. And I did that. Like say, you know, negotiate with it. Like, hey, I'm coming here. I'm showing up. I don't need to be, you know, I said in my meditations, prayers prior to is I don't need more fear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need that. What I need is some insight into why I'm so freaked out.
Right.
And what this is that lives inside of me.
Right. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. It's such an intimate experience. And I feel like we're all very privileged to like have been in the room with you and known what you brought into the room and things like that. So thank you. I mean, it's inspiring. That said, I'm going to just put this disclaimer. We are not healthcare professionals.
I am. The fuck are you talking about?
You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to, we are not saying go out and do acid or do psilocybin or do whatever ketamine or do, you know, this is your journey. You have to decide when and if you are ready for it.
No, you need to consult professionally to talk about it with your healthcare provider. Now, those healthcare providers may need to be a little on the line in order to even be talking about it at this stage. But you want to make sure that you're ultra safe, that you know who these people are, where they come from, and where they are sourcing any plant-based medicines at this particular juncture.
And where you're hoping to go, because otherwise, you know, when you go in without intention, you know, it's going to be a different experience, I imagine. So thank you everybody for joining us for another episode, season 2, episode 1.
Oh my God.
Of Not Your Mama's Therapy.
We've arrived.
We did it. We fucking did it. We're back in the saddle. Okay.
Let's just keep driving.
And we have so many good things to talk about. So make sure you like and follow us. We always love a good review. Subscribe to our podcast, of course, so you get notifications of when our new episodes are up. You can follow us on Instagram. You can email us at notyourmamastherapy@gmail.com. And then you can also follow Lair at Lair Torrent Holistic Therapist on Instagram.
That's right.
And of course, if you want a deep insight into Lair's methodology, there's the practice of love.
Oh my God, it's right there. Look at it.
Oh my God. Look at that. It's a book about his practice in your methodology. And I'm just going to say, if you haven't listened to season one, pick up the audio version.
Here she goes.
Okay.
Here she goes.
Just, I'm doing people a favor when I say this, okay? The only thing that could make it better is if your smoke show wife was reading it, okay? That would be, you'd never see me again.
She's a stone cold fox. She really My little is. Dallas dime piece. That's what they call her.
I can just see Ash like turning the radio off. Like, oh, God.
There it is. Just fucking assholes. Why are you guys such dicks? She'll say.
She can't make it through an episode without calling me a smoke show.
Can't. And it's, and you know, it just gets funnier every time you do it. And the more uncomfortable she gets, the funnier it is.
Yeah. It only encourages me to continue.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm like, 100%. Stop reacting the way you're reacting.
Thank you everybody for joining us. And we will see you on the next episode.
Sounds good. Talk soon. I'm a star bee.